ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly, the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
So, the ruins of cities of Lut nation that have been on the way of people going from Hijaz to Damascus are mentioned in this verse. It is a live embodiment and tableau that describes the painful destiny of these misled people and polytheists. It is stated, وَلَقَدْ أَتَوْ عَلَى الْقَرْيَةِ الَّتِي أُمْطِرَتْ مَطَرَ السَّوْءِ. They had passed indeed by the town on which was rained an evil rain. أَفَلَمْ يَكُونُوا يَرَوْنَهَا. Did they not then see it? This is what insisting on the wrong path does to people. أُمْطِرَتْ مَطَرَ السَّوْءِ. The final result is utter extermination, as the Holy Quran says. أَفَلَمْ يَكُونُوا يَرَوْنَهَا. If you want to close your eyes, if you want to be blind intentionally to the truths and signs of your Lord, this is what happens. And the Holy Quran interestingly mentions the reason, an incentive behind doing so. بَلْ كَانُوا لَا يَرْجُونَ نُشُورًا. They did not hope to be raised again. This is the main problem with the polytheists. They count death as the end of this life. If even they believe in the life after death, their belief will be so weak and baseless that it will not affect their soul, and also it will not affect their life programs. So that is why they belittle everything. They think that nothing but passing their low desires must be achieved in this world. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode of the program. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Aperture.
During the Vietnam War, the U.S. military engaged in an aggressive program of chemical warfare codenamed Operation Ranch Hand. Now, from 1961 to 1971, the U.S. military sprayed a range of herbicides across more than 4.5 million acres of Vietnam to destroy the forest cover and food crops used by North Vietnamese. I'm Daniel Arya, and this is Aperture. Agent Orange, which contains the deadly chemical dioxin, was the most commonly used herbicide It was later proven to cause serious health issues, including cancer, birth defects, rashes, and severe psychological and neurological problems. But the Vietnamese were not the only ones affected. U.S. soldiers unknowingly brought the legacy of Agent Orange back home. Join us for this week's Aperture as we meet three children of U.S. veterans who fallen victim to Agent Orange and follow them as they travel to Vietnam to face their demons. Here's the first part.
All I ever heard was war stories about how horrible it was and how violent everything was and that there was just death and destruction. And that's the picture that was painted in my head of what Vietnam was. And it scared me half to death when I was getting ready to come over here, to the point where I was actually shaking on the plane on my way here because I did not know what to expect.
Traveling here, someone said, you know, Heather travels back to the land of her father's demons. Vietnam is still a very scary, dangerous place to them.
I was actually very nervous and very scared. Several of my father's friends kind of scared me about some of the things that I may see and hear and experience. Their vision of Vietnam was a war-torn, angry place.
Have any bottled water before we get going, just in case.
My name is Josh Kelly. I was born on August 18th, 1975.
My name is Heather Bowser. My maiden name is Morris.
My name is Rachel Harding. I was born in northern Indiana near Chicago.
My dad was Daniel Kelly. He was in the U.S. Marine Corps, and he fought in Vietnam.
My parents had married 9 days before he had left for Vietnam. They said that, you know, if they had 9 days being together, that's what they wanted to do.
My father got his draft papers when he turned 18 and chose to marry my mother before he left. They got married, and 2 weeks later, he was deployed to Vietnam.
I've been trying to find out what exactly happened when he was there, because when I was younger, I tried to block the stories out because some of them were so scary and so violent and all that, that I just tried to not even listen to them because I didn't want to hear it because they scared the bottom of me because I was just a kid.
Oh, I'm coming home. No more marching and fighting for me. I am a soldier, a coming home soldier. No purple heart do I wear on my chest. I'm coming home, I'm coming.
When they came home, they wanted to put the war behind them. The Vietnam War was a very difficult political time, civil rights time, and so wanting to put it behind them, start their family and move on.
As soon as he came home, they chose to wait to have children. They waited about 7 years before they decided to try, and I was the firstborn.
The string's already broken, and he doesn't really care. It keeps changing fast. It don't last for long. The Colorado Rocky Mountain High.
So my mother had two miscarriages. She lost two children. And no one in our family had had any kind of problems in that respect. So it was very unexpected. And then in 1972, my mother was pregnant again and felt that she had gone into labor early. She was not due for a while. They went to the hospital. She had already lost two children, so she was very scared. She thought she might be miscarrying again at the very late time in the pregnancy. They rushed her into the hospital, and she said, I'm in labor. And she was very thin, and they kind of said, no, you're okay. It's okay. You're going to be all right. You're not in labor. You barely look pregnant. She was 7 months along at that point. My mother woke up to my father sitting at her bedside telling her, and it's hard to talk about, but he said, Sharon, she's damaged. And that's what she woke up to. So I can only imagine how scary that was.
The doctors, as soon as I was born, they took me from my mom and they put me in a little incubator, and then they rushed me off out of the room. They didn't explain anything to my mom. They just said that there was problems.
Various doctors approached my mother at different times and asked what she had done to her child. What had she done to cause such terrible problems?
They brought her over to show me to her for about 5 minutes, and then they put me on an airplane and they flew me to another state, and they kept me in the incubator. And they put me in intensive care, and they had all kinds of doctors looking at me and checking to see if I was going to live or die or what the deal was, because missing my arms and my leg, they weren't sure what all was wrong with me. They started to take me to the doctors and stuff out there, and because they were big hospitals and there was lots of doctors from around the world and everything, they wanted to try a whole bunch of different surgeries and stuff that were like experimental surgeries that nobody had ever tried before. Like, one of them was that they wanted to grow my arms back, and the way that they were going to do it is they were going to cut the skin open, break the bone, and then they were going to drill holes through it and put screws in it and put plates to separate the bone, and the bone would grow in between the gaps. And they said that it could take up to 5 to 10 years for my arms to finish growing back, and that it would be an extremely painful.
I want to go back to real quick to one memory I had in kindergarten. We were learning about our hands. This is your left hand, this is your right hand. And it's always a memory that I kind of laugh about. I love school. I couldn't wait to go to school. I was so excited. I wanted to read and do that stuff. So we're sitting in this circle, and the little children are sitting there, and I can just remember this to this day. And there was like a board on the floor, and it had a picture, an outline of a hand and another hand. And each child was to go around and take their turn and say, this is my left hand, this is my right hand, this is my left hand, this is my right hand. And so I remember just being anxious and excited to do my turn. And I went to put my hand in, and I just, at that moment, I was like, oh, okay. Because they had the outline, and my fingers didn't match the outline. And I was like, okay, this is my left hand, this is my right hand, but they don't look like that left hand and that right hand. And that was kind of like, okay, I'm different. That's different.
Pretty much all my life, as far back as I can remember, I knew I was different, because I was always going to the doctors, and I would always see the other kids playing and stuff, and I couldn't really go play with them because I either had doctor's appointments or they didn't want anything to do with me.
I have lost 19 children. I never carried more longer than 8.5 weeks, and I would lose my children. I have hypothyroidism, the infertility issue, and psoriatic arthritis. Those are the three biggest ones that I have that affect my life personally. And my family could not understand, my father included, could not understand, where did this come from? Nobody else in the family's ever had this. How come you're suffering from this and nobody else ever has?
I've seen lots of different kids that had disabilities and stuff from being like in the in the hospitals and stuff all the time, and some of them are so similar that it would have to be from the same thing. The similarities in our disabilities are so much alike. There's no way to deny that it was the same thing that caused both of them.
These are the structural formulas for 2,4-dichlorophenoxyacetic acid, commonly known as 2,4-D and 2,4-5-T. From these chemicals are made a large number of closely related compounds, which are sold commercially for weed and brush control. The Secretary of Defense initiated a project to determine whether visibility in troublesome jungle vegetation in the Republic of Vietnam could be improved by aerially applied chemical sprays. In that country, jungle growth, swamp foliage, and roadside vegetation retains its leaves the year around. Consequently, it affords ideal concealment to guerrilla terrorists who sporadically attack the free people of Vietnam. As a result of these tests, defoliation spraying was placed on an operational basis. Those chemicals already proven most effective as defoliants will continue to be used until faster-acting types.
So my father says that he said that there was spraying of his base pretty regularly. I found out since that his base was practically sprayed every day, and that is also due to its proximity to Benoit. Benoit was the epicenter of where Ranch Hand worked out of. So if they had anything left on their missions, they came around that area and used it. The perimeter was hand sprayed, aerial spraying with the C-123 planes.
My dad was in the U.S. Marine Corps. He was stationed in the Chu Lai Air Base. And while he was there, he was exposed to lots of Agent Orange. They sprayed it on everything. It was in the food, it was in the water, it was on their clothes, it was on the plants, it was on the guns, the ammo, everything had Agent Orange on it. So he was heavily exposed to Agent Orange.
North Vietnam charged today that defoliants have produced many instances of miscarriages, congenital defects, and monstrosities among children.
As we anticipated, the Vietnamese doctors that we've met with very much share our concerns about the effects of Agent Orange.
Although that war was long ago, there is lingering anger about the United States' use of a controversial defoliant spread by American aircraft on the jungles there.
Milton Ross, a special forces advisor near Pleiku, has a son born without the tips of his fingers.
Frank Moore is nearly dead from cancer. He thinks the cancer was caused by chemical defoliants he was exposed to as a soldier in Vietnam.
My dad explained to me about how dangerous the stuff was because it would kill off big old trees and everything in just a couple of days. He would tell me the stories about how he would have to mix it and he would have to load it into the tanks, and he would put the tanks on the planes and the helicopters and everything while he was in the war.
It's still causing trouble, and all of the people that have lost their lives to Agent Orange, and this is kind of where it began. So it's very sad.
We found out that the rate of miscarriages, fetal death in utero, and birth defects are 4 times higher than in the exposed, among the exposed, than the non-exposed. We have carried out some more studies. I am now very sure, certain, that toxic chemicals cause many things to my people, to the exposed people. Cannot deny it.
Yes, exactly.
Cannot deny the relationship between dioxin with the abnormal outcome of pregnancy, among the exposed people.
After the war time, I mean, after 75, his dad came back here and they have the first child. But due to the Agent Orange, she or he died after 10 days. The biggest biggest child of the family is a normal child because he was born before the time that the death came to the army.
Thank you.
But do you know in America who carries the pain of Agent Orange? The veterans who serve. The veterans feel responsible.
Yes.
Our fathers felt responsible for us. Even for in Vietnam. I mean, they felt responsible. The soldier, not the chemical companies or the government that made the decisions.
So my father felt extreme guilt. He felt like he had caused my birth defects. He had told my mother that every time he looked at me, he felt that it was his responsibility. He had caused this to me. And that's a major problem in the United States, trying to work through the Agent Orange issue, is that the veterans feel extreme guilt.
The man that my mom knew from the time she was four did not come home from Vietnam. He's still wandering around in the jungle somewhere. He came home a very angry man, very sad man.
My dad was suffering more and more from his PTSD. He was having other health issues and he was getting weak, and he couldn't do the things that he could do before, and his health was just going downhill.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. You're listening to I'm Ata, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sayyid Murtaza and Sayyid Mohsen. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Sayyid Murtaza, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Thank you very much for inviting.
Thank you very much again for accepting my invitation to the program Viewpoints. Today we want to talk about the personality of Jesus Christ, or Isa ibn Maryam, Hazrat Masih. Also, these are the titles that are used for Prophet of Allah, and also Lady Mary or Hazrat Maryam, as pictured in the religion of Islam and the Quran, and the respect that Islam had for these two very dear personalities. Samir, let's start with you, brother. How the religion of Islam looked at the very personality of Hazrat Masih?
Thank you very much. You know, Jesus, an English name,
yes,
and Mary, both are very special characters, and they have a special status actually in the religion of Islam, because these two characters have been compared to many other, you know, characters around the world, and their names have been many times mentioned and brought in the Book of Islam, Quran. So when Islam is bringing these two names and is quoting on them, and is talking about their lifestyles, and is providing the whole humanity some information how these people were faithful to God. So it shows that the religion of Islam is not only against Jesus and Mary, but also is supporting them and is asking people to respect them highly.
Yes.
So this is a picture that Islam draws of these two great personalities. Jesus is the prophet to God.
Yes.
And God revealed even a book, Gospel, to Jesus.
Yes.
So it shows that Jesus is one of the descendants of Abraham.
Yes.
So it shows that the prophet of Islam and Jesus both have their, you know, backgrounds the same.
Yes.
So it shows that Islam has compared Jesus and Mary with many other personalities, and the great respect has been given to them.
That's right. But Sayyid Mohsen, the look that even some of the Christian communities has at their own prophets and their books is very much different from what the religion of Islam has. And this makes a question that who knows better is religion? You know, the followers of the same religion or the followers of the religion that comes, you know, so many years after that? What's your answer to that?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, when we talk about the Islam, Islam is not a separate religion from what Jesus Christ brought for the people of that time. We should bear in mind that the Judaism or Christianity, this word Christianity or Judaism,
yes,
this is a word which was made by people themselves, and not this name wasn't put by the prophets over the people. For example, Jesus did not said like, whoever will follow me or whoever I'm preaching, they are Christians.
Okay.
This deviation and the, yes, names were put by the people themselves.
Yes.
Whereas in the Quran, Allah says, Bani Israel.
Okay.
Okay. There's no Judaism. And obviously, when we see this, like the people who later put a specific name for themselves because they're attaching themselves to someone. So they got the name of Christianity and the Judaism. When we talk about the Islam, we have many verses in the Quran, and there are many proofs in the Quran, the verses that say like all the prophets who came, they all brought one thing, and that was Islam itself. Means submitting to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Islam in its literal meaning, submitting. And Muslim also means, or the Muslim, when we say Muslim, it means the one who submits.
Yes.
So all the prophets, they asked their people to submit to one God, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yes.
And that was the main theme of every single prophet. So when we say like, do we know more? Does Islam knows more, or the people who are following? We should also look at the history that the gospel which brother has referred to, when it was written. It was written later, like after like 400 years of Jesus. Like,
you mean this is not the same text that was revealed?
No, it wasn't the same text which was said by the Jesus. It was written 400 years after that.
Okay.
And the Old Testament that we have, it was written 1,000 years after the Moses.
Okay.
So we need to look at the historical aspect as well. Whereas the Quran, when we're talking about the Quran itself, it was written at the time of the Prophet, and he dictated the verses which he used to reveal.
Okay.
So I don't think this is a right question, like if we want to say, or it is not right to say, like the Muslims do not know about the Jesus because they are not the follower. We are the hard follower of Jesus and Moses and Abraham as well, because they are our prophets. And to become a Muslim must believe in 124,000 prophets, from which there is a Jesus and there is Moses. And in the Quran, we can see many times Allah has said, Isa ibn Maryam. He refers to the Jesus, son of Mary.
That's right.
And also to the prophet Abraham and the Moses. And we know that the Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, they all are the Abrahamic religions. So when the main person who's like, we call ourselves Abrahamic, so we all refer back to Ibrahim alayhi salam.
And the monotheistic one, the religions all across the world. But say, Murtaza, you know, the question is now, we must have enough knowledge about the previous religions too. You know, as a Muslim, and this is when maybe some of the Muslims around the world does not have enough knowledge about their own religions and the details around. And I think this gives us a kind of authenticity about how the religions were revealed to the prophets of Allah during the history, and how the religion of Islam could complete the previous versions of the religions, isn't so?
You know, historically talking, everyone needs actually to learn a lesson from history. And when it comes to speaking about religions and the background of religions, and the religions that were actually before and after one another. So let's look at Jesus Christ and his mother Mary in the Book of Islam. And we know that the Book of Islam, Quran specifically, has put a great emphasis on Jesus' presence in society and Mary in society as well. So, you know, these two acted strongly like messengers, and they actually received messages from God, and then it was disseminated and distributed among people. So the same two roles have been, you know, followed and have been taken by Jesus Christ and his mother. So it shows a footstep to all of us that we need to follow in their footsteps, like we Muslims must follow in footsteps of our prophets and all our infallible imams.
That's right.
So it shows to all of us that what has been preached, it must be practiced.
That's right.
So unfortunately, we don't have this. In Christianity, unfortunately, we have a lot of rules that most of them have been overlooked by Christians.
Yes.
And in Judaism, we have the same thing, because I had my personal studies related to these factors.
Okay.
We have commonalities, we have similarities between religions, but unfortunately, those rules, the very effective rules, have been overlooked by the followers. And it shows that Islam as a religion has a better understanding, has a better description of the role of Jesus Christ and his mother.
That's right.
So it shows that people need to learn a very good lesson from history and look at the picture how Islam actually created of Jesus Christ and his mother.
That's right. But Sayyid Mohsen, what was the main reason of revealing such ayahs to the Prophet of Islam in Arab Peninsula about the previous prophets, especially Prophet Masih, you know, Isa ibn Maryam, Jesus Christ, and Lady Mary? This is really a great question to be asked, you know, that what was the main reason? I mean, what is the use? For example, the ignorant Arabs, the Jahil Arab on that time, being familiar with the previous prophets, was there any intention behind that?
Well, first of all, let me just make clear that when we talk about the Arabs, the way you said Jahil or ignorant.
Sorry, no, at the time of Jahiliyyah, sorry.
Even when we use the word Jahiliyyah, that does not mean they were ignorant. You know, they had the best poets. And when they used to hear a poem from someone, they used to memorize it at the spot.
Okay.
So they were intelligent at that time. The Jahalat is something else. The Jahalat we refer because they were worshipping idols.
Okay.
They were not worshipping the God and the religions, the Abrahamic religions. That's why, you know, they were in the jahala, in the darkness. This jahala means darkness, not the ignorance.
Okay.
That's the first thing.
Okay.
The second thing is, when we look at the prophets, we see that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has sent 124,000 prophets. But we don't see their names in the Quran. Not all of them.
Yes.
The answer is, if the Quran was the book of history, then you would find all the names with their date of birth, I don't know, date of demise, and the place where they were. Whereas the Quran is the book of guidance. It has revealed to give guidance and give lesson to the people, to take people towards the right path. Therefore, those prophets who are mentioned in the Quran, number one, they are Ulul Azm. Like all the Ulul Azm, like the, you can say, the supreme prophets. There are six of them. But we have like Prophet Nuh, Prophet Abraham, Prophet Musa, Prophet Jesus, Prophet Muhammad, and Prophet Adam, alayhi salam, the first prophet. So these prophets, six prophets, they're Ulul Azm, basically. Or if some, like according to some, they don't count Prophet Adam, alayhi salam, then we have five.
Five, that's
plus
right.
Plus Prophet Adam.
Five again is right, too.
All these prophets are mentioned,
yes.
Number one. Number two, the rest of the prophets, like Prophet Khizr and other prophets, why they're discussed in the Quran? Because this book is book of guidance. So Allah needs to give guidance. Therefore, these prophets who are mentioned, all of them, they were the, we can say, like, they have all those characters which the rest of the prophets from 124,000 prophets had. And it was, we can say, they have it collectively in themselves. And all the characters which all the prophets from Adam alayhi salam till Jesus had, all of them were in the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wasallam. So we have these narrations and these things. So why the Jesus has been discussed in the Quran is because, number one, the followers of that religion, Christianity, are still in the world. They were at that time, at the time of the Prophet. Similarly, the story of the Musa alayhi salam of Bani Israel, it is also mentioned. The others as well.
That's right.
The polytheists, the stories of the polytheists are also mentioned, okay. Like mushrikeen, the idol, yes, worshippers, and all those. So basically, it's because we have many people who are still the followers of such prophets, yes, those prophets, number one. Number two, because these prophets, the characteristics of these prophets, this were in a way that they have become a role model, not for the people of their time, but for the people even after, yes, them. And because there's many discussions, especially in the Christianity, they believe that the Jesus is Son of God.
Mm-hmm.
This is what they believe.
Trinity.
Yeah, Trinity. Yes. They believe that Jesus is Son of God. On the other hand, in the Quran, we have seen, like in the history as well, that Mubahila has happened between the Muslims and the Christians.
Christians, that's right.
The main base was that there were some Christians who came from Najran to Medina to see what this prophet, new prophet, is saying. And when they came there, they said to the prophet that we believe in Jesus, Son of God. And the Prophet Muhammad said, I believe in Jesus, Prophet of God.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you are basically reducing the status of the Jesus,
yes,
from being son to the prophet, and you made him a servant of God. He's not the servant, he is the Son of God.
Okay.
And then Prophet argued, Prophet said, what do you believe? What is your belief about the Adam alayhi salam? They said he was the servant of God. Then the Prophet said, Adam neither had the father nor mother. So he should enjoy that status of being the Son of God, whereas Jesus had the mother at least. So these were the arguments. So why, yes, Jesus is there? Because even in the Quran, we have the verse that Jesus has said, O Allah, I never said them that I'm your son. I'm your prophet, and you need to judge between us on the day of judgment.
Okay.
So the other reason, the second reason is because of the many followers of such religions. Therefore, it is necessary to talk about such prophets so that these people can come back to the right path.
That's right.
And the deviation which they had from the right religion,
yes,
they should basically refer back. And that's why the Quran is talking about the Jesus alayhi salam, the Virgin Mary, the role of Gabriel as, yes, an angel of, yes, revelation, and the other prophets as well.
That's all right. And really, there must be a lesson in all these life accounts of the previous prophets in the Holy Quran for not only the Muslims, but also, you know, the people of other generations who want to be familiar with their own, historical account of the life of the prophets and the great personalities like Lady Mary. And you know, Lady Mary, you know, has really a special status. She's believed by the Muslims to be among the outstanding role models for the ladies all around the world, isn't it, Sayyid Mirza?
Of course, yes. Role models and these great characters must have something to teach us. And if we can't find a lesson to learn from them, I don't think we can call them role models.
Yes.
And the Book of Islam is full of stories about these great characters. Jesus Christ himself and his mother, Lady Mary, both of these two names have been mentioned many times. Specifically, Lady Mary, I think her name has been mentioned over 34, 35 times. And it shows her great status in the Book of Islam. So these two characters, not only for Christians, but also for all humanity, have something to deliver. So in today's world, I think the followers of Islam and the followers of all religions must look into the private, social, and personal lifestyles of these two characters, because certainly we will find a lot of merits and advantages that we can pick up and use them in our own life. So I don't think it is right and correct to say that Muslims, for example, should not celebrate the birthday of Jesus Christ.
Okay.
So it doesn't show that Muslims are following the Christianity. It
yes.
shows that they show their great respect
that's right.
To the birth of Jesus Christ.
Okay.
So today is the Jesus' birthday. So
yeah, December 25th,
Muslims,
that's right.
So all Muslims must respect.
Yes.
And if they celebrate, I don't think it's wrong.
Yes.
It's not because of the Christianity. It's
yes.
because of the Holy Prophet,
yes.
that his name has been directly
yes.
mentioned many times in the Book of Islam.
That's
so
right.
there is a lesson from us.
Yes.
That we have to follow all these religions,
yes.
all these prophets, and respect them as much as we can.
As we could see in the Islamic Republic of Iran, there are so many Christians living. And on these days, from December 25th to January 1st, they are celebrating the celebration in their own churches, in Tehran, in Yazd, in Shiraz, and in different places in Isfahan, all around the Islamic Republic of Iran, shows how much the also religious minorities like Christianity are respected in an Islamic land, the Shia Islamic land like Iran. Thank you, my Sayyid Mursa and Sayyid Mohsen, for your presence in the program. And again, congratulations on the birthday anniversary of Isa ibn Maryam, Prophet Jesus Christ, and also congratulations to all our Christian brothers and sisters all around the world. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us. This was Viewpoints. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/ and Call of Islam page. Also, YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Isa ibn Maryam alayhim as-salam bashar atba'ahu bi nabiyyin ya'ti min ba'dihi ismuhu Ahmad. وأحمد هو محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم
عيسى نبي الله قال مبشرا بعدي سيأتي أحمد ومحمد
يا معشرا وصفوا المحمد بالقبيح قد كان أولى أن تقولوا كالمسيح من كان يتبع المسيح يقول ما قد قاله عيسى بأحمد من مدين.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity,
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. We are looking at human rights from the perspective of the commander of the faithful, Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi assalam. And you can find that Amir al-Mu'mineen has summarized all the human rights that we require in the letter to his commander, Malik al-Ashtar, Ridwanullahi alayhi. Amongst the things that deals with the human rights that Amir al-Mu'mineen mentions in this letter, he says to him, keep at a distance one who exposes the weakness of others. After all, the masses are not free from weaknesses. It is the duty of the ruler to shield them. Now, being protected is a human right. I need to feel safe from whatever weakness that I might have. I should not be exposed, especially when we are dealing with small communities where everything could be exposed. Now, any community, every community, have their own weaknesses. They have their own faults. Should we pick on that? Should we try to defame them for these mistakes, or should we cover it? Now, even on a personal note, from a moral and ethical perspective, that when a person does a mistake and you see a person committing a mistake, especially if it's done in private, we are being told and commanded to conceal their mistakes and their faults, not expose them. For exposing them, we can fall into many sins, amongst of which riba and sedition. So we should not indulge ourselves in that. So he says to them, it is the duty of the ruler, it's the duty of the governments, it's the duty of the people in power to make sure that people are shielded and safe and protected from the mistakes. And he says to him, do not bring to light that which is hidden. Sometimes people make mistakes. But however you see, when those rulers go on TV or interviews, they try to shift the blame from themselves and place it on people. And they pinpoint to certain acts that happens within people themselves. So they try to prey on the mistakes of people in order for them to shift the blame from themselves. So he says to him, at the end of the day, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala watches everything. So you conceal, you hide, let Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala deal with it. And then he says to him, among the things that a person needs to do on a personal level with his fellow human beings, or if a person is in power and in position, he says to him, untie every knot of hatred for the people and cut asunder every string of enmity between them. Now, it's natural for us as human beings to have hatred towards one another because we get into conflicts, arguments, fights, and what have you. So this is created. The rule, the duty of the ruler, it should be that which unties these knots of hate and tries to create peace and love within a system. Let us take a break and then we'll continue right after. Ooh, 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 ooh.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are still listening to the program For Humanity. So Amir al-Mu'minin Salamullah alayhi says to Malik, you need to make sure that you get rid of and eliminate hatred from within a community and society. Obviously, it's a basic right as well. And then he says to him, protect yourself from every such act as may not be quite correct for you. Do not make haste in seeking confirmation of tale-telling, for the tale-teller is a deceitful person appearing in a garb of a friend. Now, also, when it comes to rulers and those who are in power, they need to make sure that they are protected from committing mistakes and wrongs, and they should have the right people around them. Because sometimes we see in many systems and countries around the world, when they have, for example, the spy agencies like the CIA, KGB, Mossad, and what have you, all these agencies sometimes, if not all the times, they bring wrong information to their systems just to create havoc in the world. I mean, obviously, that's their purpose. But let's assume we have a proper system in place. Amir al-Mu'minin says, you have to make sure that those that gives you the news, those that bring you information, are not the type that they close themselves in the garment of a friend, but in fact they are deceitful people. So you see that this happens most of the times within people in power, where when I have a problem, an issue with a friend or with people, and I try to harm them, I go and tell stories about them to the government and make lies and make accusations, and those people end up being imprisoned or end up being harmed. So Amir al-Mu'minin Salamullah alayhi says to Malik, it's a duty upon you to protect your community, to serve the community in the best way you can. And you have to start by protecting yourself from not having deceitful people around you. Those people should not be around you. They should not be in your cabinet. They should not be in your parliament. They should not be in your advisors. Because those people obviously don't care about human rights. Obviously, they don't care about people. They only care about themselves. So therefore, that should be taken into consideration. And again, the public or the masses, they have the right over everything, that everything needs to be done for them in a way as they deserve. So Amir al-Mu'minin Salamullah Ali, in this letter to Malik al-Ashtar, and this is just the beginning, the first few paragraphs of it, where he talks about how man should be dealt with in a just manner, how people, when I say man, obviously I mean people in general, they should be, their rights should be maintained, and their freedom should be given to them, and their affairs should be sorted. No country, no group of people should suffer, especially when we look at a modern world like ours, where everything is available, but sometimes we become the devils and we try to prevent other fellow human beings from indulging and having what we have in order to make their lives better. Rather, we do our best to make sure that they suffer the most, because we look at them as enemies rather equal in humanity. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
اللهم صل على محمد وآله اللهم صل على محمد وآله اللهم صل على محمد وآله اللهم صل على محمد وآله
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today.
Africa Today.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a warm welcome to Africa Today, a weekly program that gives you an alternative view of events making headlines in Africa. Now, this week, we are focusing on the diplomatic ties between the Islamic Republic of Iran and the Republic of Kenya. These two great nations have enjoyed cordial ties that have continued to improve over the years. To discuss this, we are joined by two special guests. In the studio here, we have His Excellency Joshua Getimu, the ambassador of the Republic of Kenya to Iran. And joining us via video link is His Excellency Jafar Barmaki, the ambassador of the Islamic Republic of Iran to Kenya. Stay with us till the end of the program. And as I told you earlier, here in our studio in Tehran, we have His Excellency Joshua Getimu, the ambassador of the Republic of Kenya to Iran. Thank you very much, Mr. Ambassador.
Thank you, Barak, for this opportunity.
And joining us from Kenya via video link is His Excellency Jafar Barmaki, the ambassador of the Islamic Republic of Iran to Kenya. Thank you very much, Ambassador Jafar Barmaki, for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for it, David. Invitation.
And now, before we proceed with our discussion, let's listen to a brief introduction of our subject today.
This year marks 50 years since the establishment of diplomatic ties between Iran and Kenya. These ties witnessed tremendous progress following the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979. These two countries enjoy historical ties that continue to thrive to the present times. Kenya and Iran are both strategically located and enjoy diverse markets. This creates immense potential for cooperation when it comes to complementing each other's requirements in imports and export arenas.
Now, let's start with you here in the studio, Ambassador Joshua Getimu. Now, can you briefly elaborate to us on the current level of ties between Kenya and Iran?
Thank you, Mubarak. And what I can say is that the two countries, Kenya and Iran, have enjoyed warm and cordial relations within the framework of the Kenya-Iran Joint Commission for Cooperation, JCC, of 2014. And further, The two countries have concluded several agreements and a memorandum of understanding. Mm-hmm. Some of them include, for example, the Official Development Assistance, ODA, credit line facility, and agricultural cooperation. Mm-hmm. Though we have done this, there is more we can do to review the signed agreements and MOUs between the two countries, as many of them remain pending. Some have lapsed, and we hope that come June this year, we will be holding the 7th Kenya-Iran Joint Commission for Cooperation. In Nairobi, in Kenya, we will be hosting. That will enrich our bilateral relationship further.
Now, to you, Ambassador Barmaki, can you also briefly elaborate now on the historical aspect of ties between Kenya and Iran?
Yeah, Mubarak, you may know very well that the Iranian